Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome back to another episode of Cutting the Distance. Today, I'm not going to have a guest. I'm just going to go over some listener questions. You know, a lot of times we interview somebody, we talk about turkey hunting, and maybe some of those tactics are too advanced, or maybe those tactics don't make sense to them yet. So I've been getting a lot of questions by maybe a big game hunter or somebody just wanting to get into turkey hunting, and they've got a lot of questions on what do they need? What's a minimum? What do they have to have? Something that's nice to have but not necessarily needed. So I was just going to take today's time and just kind of go over that for a new turkey hunter. You know, it's the middle of January, late January now. Turkey hunting's kind of right around the corner. And for those that haven't did it, it may be a little bit of a daunting task on what do you need. And if you're a beginner turkey hunter or a seasoned turkey hunter, there may be a few things you can pick up during this episode that you did or didn't already know. So the first thing we're gonna skip the listener questions today, and we're just gonna go into a list of questions that I've kind of copied and pasted in here from people over the last couple months that want to get into turkey hunting, and then we'll go through those. So, what do you need as a minimum to go out in the turkey woods? I would say, ideally, you're gonna have to have either one a 20. Or a 12 gauge shotgun with some of the new ammunition. You can actually get away now with some of these 410s with specific ammo loaded for turkeys. You know, with TSS coming online the way it has, and some of the things we've been able to do with some of the smaller shots, 410 is now a very, very good option for the youth or for anybody on turkeys. I would say 20 and 12 gauges are still more widely used, just a little more range, a little denser pattern typically. So you either need a shotgun, or if you want to take on archery, you know, turkey hunting out of the gate, your bow setup will do as well. You know, there are other states that allow for other weapons, but for today, we're just going to talk shotguns and archery equipment. Shotgun is easy to understand. You're looking to get a hit on the head, neck area. And we're going to get into ammo a little bit as well. But one thing you need to do is find a good ammunition. And I just mentioned TSS, and I would say TSS makes the 410s a viable option. But if you're wanting to do this on a budget and don't want to shoot a shotgun shell that's anywhere from $5 to $15 a piece, I would recommend you got to pattern your gun. But there's a lot of different manufacturers out there that make fours and fives and sixes, whether it's heavy shot, whether your state allows lead or copper plated lead, whatever it may be, just go pattern your gun. And when I go to pattern my shotgun, I'm not looking for a certain number of hits within a certain area. I know a lot of people talk about, 3 to 4 hits within the neck and brain area. What I'm looking for is I typically draw like a 10-inch circle, and then within that 10-inch circle, I'm looking for a very even, uniform, and as dense of pattern as I can get. I want there to not be, too many areas in there that doesn't have a BB within like a 1-inch circle, out to about 30 yards. And then checking for the effectiveness of that load, some of these TSS that I do shoot out of my 12 gauge, I can keep that sort of pattern density all the way out to 50 or 60 yards, just because there's so many of those number eights or number nines, in that shot that, my pattern is viable, out to that 50 yard range. Now, do I want to shoot a turkey out there? Ideally, no, but knowing your gun's capabilities, and also, with that load, you need to find a load that your gun with your choke shoots well. Just because your buddy has the same gun you do and the same choke you do and shoots a certain type of ammo doesn't necessarily mean that gun is going to shoot identical to your buddy's. Now, the chances of it shooting similar are more likely, but you still need to go pattern and test your own gun, your own load, to make sure that's a good option. Now, if you're going out with archery gear, there are different trains of thought. They've got, a lot of broadhead companies have specific, broadheads with very large cutting diameters, for shooting them in the head. There also, you can use, standard, broadheads, expandables, fixed blades, and, shoot them in the vitals, just like you would, like your big game hunting. I personally, aside from the kill zones that are put on the turkey targets, I've never went out and archery hunted turkeys until this year. And so, that's one thing that I'm going to have to educate myself on a little bit more, is based on shooting angles and, vitals, kind of where I'm going to need to aim. On a big game, I've kind of got it dialed. No matter which angle the animal is, I know where the vitals are, where I can get through, what that bone structure looks like. On a turkey, I'm going to have to kind of refresh where the vitals sit. If it's not a headshot, where's a good shot? And then also, an archery hunter has got the big drawback of not being seen while you try to draw your bow. So a lot of times if these toms are in full strut or whatnot, you need to figure out when you can draw your bow, not be seen, and be able to be an efficient archery, turkey hunter. So with that said, those are kind of the two things you need to turkey hunt. And aside from a license or a tag for your respective state or the respective area you want to hunt, I would say that's really all that's required for turkey hunting: a weapon, a tag, and license. Everything from there on, turkey hunting is going to be a bonus or a luxury at that point. Do you need calls? No. Do you need decoys? No. Do you have to have a blind? No. There's a lot of things you can do, especially on certain turkeys that are patternable, or if you scout them, you can just set up on their travel pass and do just fine. Now, that isn't why I set out every spring to turkey hunt. I want to interact with the bird. I want to get them to gobble. I want to be on their path. But being a well-rounded turkey hunter, being able to use some of that scouting and some of that path, pathways and stuff that the turkeys just naturally want to use, will go a long ways in allowing me to be in the right spot to call them in. So let's go into like camo. Do you need specific leafy suits, or will any camo do? I guess I'll start off. It really depends on whether you're in a blind or not. If you're in a blind, black clothes on a travel path would work just fine. Like, you don't need to have the best camo out there. Now, I will say movement is more important, or lack of movement is more important than camo, in my opinion. Whether you're wearing the best camo completely concealed, if you move at the wrong time, when that turkey can see you, if they detect anything out of the norm, they're going to typically bust, and you're not going to get a second chance at them. If this is a new turkey hunter and you haven't got a chance to experience just how much they pick up and how slight of movement they will pick up, you'll be in for a surprise when you go to, you know, to move your foot, or your foot's asleep and you move one way or the other while they're there, they will pick it up. So when I'm turkey hunting, movement is sloth-like slow. If I've got to bring the gun up, if I've got a pan, everything is very deliberate and very, very slow, like over-exaggerated slow to get my gun in position. Unless I need to make a quick shot or I can swing really quick and know I'm going to get on it. Everything else I do is very subtle. We'll get into calling in a little bit, but even as far as running box calls, pot calls, mouth calls, if that movement's involved and you think they can see it, you need to be smart about when you're calling, and when they can pick it up. So camo, I say it's best to wear a camo that fits in with the area you're hunting. You want to be as natural, and you want to disappear as much as possible, in your surrounding. Myself, I'm a tree sitter. I don't like to be in a blind. I don't, you know, put myself, behind a pile of brush. I found that I can't shoot as well. And while you're trying not to make noise, if you've got to swing your gun or you're, you know, try to get drawn, in a brush pile, it's going to be detrimental. So I try to sit in front of a clear tree, let the tree break up my outline, and use that to my advantage. And, you know, when you set up on the tree, one thing you need to be looking for as a turkey hunter is that you've got clear shooting lanes out in front of you, that you didn't give yourself like little small slivers on where you expect that turkey to be coming from. So camo, not required, but definitely, in my opinion, adds to, you know, the success of a turkey hunter and lets you get away with a little bit more movement. Now, on the same topic as camo, like, are there any, you know, absolutely do not white turkey hunting? And I would say colors that you'll see on turkeys that you want to shoot. So let's say a tom, reds, whites, and blues, you know, the color of tom turkeys' heads, you, especially on public land, maybe not as important on private land, but I would still definitely avoid those colors. Don't wear red, white, and blue, if at all possible, you know, while you're hunting. There's no need to, and all you do is open yourself up to the potential of somebody that doesn't identify their game very well. You know, there's been lots of horror stories of people being shot in the turkey woods. So we just want to avoid that if possible. One thing that does kind of go along with camo as well is face mask. Is there any need for face covering? And I don't have any scientific backup for this, but I feel like a turkey, both eye contact and like facial recognition, like it's one of those things that a turkey will pick up more so than not. And so I always wear a face covering, as much of my nose, my mouth, you know, chin, everything that I can, basically just leaving my eyes exposed. I found seems to get me picked off a little less than by you know, not wearing a face covering or just having face paint on or whatever it may be. A full covering mask seems to be the ticket. Let's move into scouting. You can be the greatest caller in the world. You can travel a bunch of distance. You can do a lot of things to make up for this, but I feel like all of that aside, scouting your area, knowing where the birds are at, knowing where the birds want to be, is going to be one of the best things you can do to ensure that you're going to have some success come your spring season. With that said, we also need to be very, we need to recognize and be conscious of those. If you're scouting earlier, let's say into March or early April, that flock and where those birds are at is going to change fairly drastically from the start of that scouting, you know, mid-March, to the start of hunting season in April. And so if you were to go on a scouting trip mid-March and come back over on the opener, you know, April 15th, come back over on your trip May 1st, whatever it may be, those turkeys are going to be at different areas. The flocks are going to look different. The dynamics of those flocks are going to be different. And so the closer you can scout to season and ensure that those birds are where you think they are, the better likelihood of them being there is. Which, you know, not to be obvious, but the closer you are to season, it's just something I've heard over and over. They've went and scouted middle of March, they're antsy coming off of winter to go look for, you know, turkeys, they find them and then they go back in the middle of April. And then the next message I get is, where are the turkeys at? Why aren't they in that area where I had them everywhere? You know, typically during the, you know, whether it's human pressure, whether it's just areas they want to be in, did they follow the snow line up? It just really depends where you're hunting and what those birds want to do. I know the place we hunt in Kansas, the earlier in the season, the better. That property holds the birds early, but then as the you know, spring goes on, those toms continue to disperse and cover more ground, and kind of, they don't all leave his property, but they definitely become thinner on some of those properties. Here in Washington, where we're hunting, you know, mountain country, a lot of times we still have snow fairly low, middle of April, and as you know, May go moves on and that snow line's moving up, some of those birds will walk up the mountain with the snow line. So you could see those birds move. Yeah, they're only 500 feet up in elevation, but they might be a couple miles away as they moved up. So you got to keep all of that in mind as you're scouting for birds, and then kind of where you're going to find them come season.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly, and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time: Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who has used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way that they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where Land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to Land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Do you need decoys or not? I always have decoys with me. You know, when I first started and couldn't afford anything, it was a lot of like the Flambeau little foam folder decoys I could throw in the back of my vest. Now I tend to carry a life-size Dave Smith around with me, at least a hen, if not a hen and a Jake. I will say, especially in Kansas on Easterns, when we were running and gunning in Washington last year, we did pack one of the hens around, but we didn't have as much time to set her up on certain scenarios. It's been a little hit or miss. Sometimes you will see, you know, birds decoy perfect. They'll see the decoy, they'll come in. Other times they'll see the decoy, it may be out of place, or it just, it surprises them and it hasn't worked. So I would recommend everybody play with it. See if it works for you. I've had great success with them, and I've had times where I wondered, like, I wonder if I didn't have a decoy out there, if it would have worked. So it's really trying to find your own way to hunt. I always have decoys with me, whether we elect to use them or not is a different story. I would say my general rule of thumb is, if I'm in a spot where that decoy can get that turkey's eyes off of me, or can be seen from a long ways away, you know, if they're going to be on a power line meadow, or they're going to be somewhere where they can see a long ways and that decoy can get their attention, we'll typically put it out. If we're in tight, if we're in the timber or a bird, it's not the visual's not going to be to our advantage, then we'll typically leave, you know, just set the bag next to our chair, and go with that. Do you need to bring blinds or makeshift ground blinds out in the woods? I don't like being tied up in an area. Now, if you've got really good info and you've scouted well and you know birds are likely to come by, you know, get your blind out early. Make it so it's not you know, a surprise to the turkey on opening day. All of a sudden a blind shows up. You can use them. I like to be more mobile. I like to kind of run and gun regardless of whether I'm, you know, hunting Easterns or Rios or Merriam's here in Washington. I like to stay mobile. But on that same thread, what I do like to do is carry some pruning shears, because a lot of times there may be brush that's in the way or an area where you want to set up where you've got good visibility, but some of the brush, like within 5 to 10 yards, makes it so you can't. You can cut that out of your way, cut it out in a way where you can still see, but kind of gives you some concealment. And that's one thing I do like to do is cut myself into a hole. I've got good visibility, maybe not giving up my entire face by cutting out limbs and making so that you can see out and get a shot if needed. So rather than carry blinds or concealment cloth or makeshift blind material, we typically bring shears, and we can kind of brush ourselves in or add some brush as needed. So that kind of goes for gear. The last thing I'll talk about, and I would say this is definitely a luxury, not a requirement. There've been plenty of days where I've got calls kind of stuffed in all my pockets, is, do you need a vest or do you need a pack of any sort? I grew up turkey hunting. I always had a vest of some sort. You know, back in the day, I think I was running like a Primo's, one of Will's vests that was, you know, had all kinds of pockets and holes and, you know, striker holders and shell holders. And why I loved it, and there was room for everything, it was pretty heavy. And on some of these warmer days, when you get into early May, becomes a warmer option, it seemed to be a lot. Nowadays, you know, Paul at FHF, he's designed an Apex belt. I was able to test it, you know, last year. They released it, limited release here prior to 23, and then it should be a full release for 24. I really like it because it's really streamlined. It allows me to keep a chest pack on. It lets me have some pockets on the belt, but it's a very lightweight, breathable system. And I don't feel like I've got a heavy, cumbersome vest on, as I hunt. So a vest is another one of those things where it's not a requirement. It is a luxury, but, for those that have them or can afford them or, want them, it can definitely be, a nice addition for sure. You get the season, and a lot of guys, you know, you need to locate turkeys. And this is different whether I'm in Kansas or around home. In Kansas, a lot of times we may not even roost birds because they typically, if they don't get bumped off of those trees, they will typically roost in those same trees. So a lot of times we will go out at night, listen, but we're not so dead set on roosting those turkeys as we are. Let's say we're in Eastern Washington and these birds are following the snow line up, or these Merriam's are all over the mountainside. They will roost potentially in a different spot night after night after night. And we found that if we don't go roost birds here in Eastern Washington, or, you know, same goes for the Idaho mountain birds or so on, Montana birds, it's a little more important. So we go out every night, you know, about that time of fly up. So I would say, you know, about, you know, sundown on, you know, they'll be on the ground for another 20, 25 minutes, and then eventually they'll fly up. And then you've got about a 30 to 35, maybe even a 45 minute window we found over there where those birds will talk a lot while they're in their roost. So we will, if we're driving roads, if there's a county road, if we're in on a ridge system, we'll go in there and just listen after fly up. Some calls you can use during that time. You can use your owl hooter. You can use crow calls. One of my favorite nighttime locators, which I do not use during the daytime because I don't want them to feel that there's a coyote on the ground, is just a quick coyote howl. It's a great nighttime locator. We seem to get really good responses out of that. So we'll go up, get to a good vantage, just like you're trying to locate a bugle or anywhere up high where you can hear a lot of country, and locate a bird. Then if we need to, we can drive to a lower area, try to get a better pinpoint on them, and then make sure we've got a good idea, because in the morning we're going to want to start there. That's where we're going to start our hunt. When you do find a roost tree, if you've got them pretty well defined to that, the next thing I like to do is get on Onyx, or if you know the area really well, and try to figure out which way they're going to pitch out of that tree. If you haven't got a chance to see them pitch out of that tree, if you haven't had a chance to see what they do in that area, a lot of times we set up wrong in the morning, or we go in kind of blind and we just set up close to the roosting birds, and they typically pitch out the opposite direction. So put a little thought into where you think that bird is going to pitch and why, and then that could definitely help. And even more so, you don't have to be so close to the bird. You can go out 150, 200 yards. If you think that that's where that bird's gonna push out or feed, or where they're gonna strut, definitely go that direction rather than just below the tree somewhere. Now, with that said, I seem to always struggle, regardless of where I set up on a roost tree. It seems like the bird always wants to do something that I don't want them to do, or go a direction I don't want them to go. And I've always struggled, like, you do some tree yelps, you always want to get their attention, or at least let them know you're there, versus being completely quiet, hoping that you pick the right direction. And I always kind of, go back and forth. And there's been some times where it's worked great, and there's been some times where it's like, I shouldn't have made a sound. So it's really up to you to kind of figure out, what you want to do, if you want to make a sound, or if you want to alert them of your location so at least they know. There's no real right or wrong answer there, but I would say typically lean towards at least making some really soft tree yelps and then putting the call away. So let's get into, one thing that a lot of people, for me, spring turkey is about using the calls and the vocalizations and getting these things to come in on a string if possible. So what vocalizations as a turkey hunter do you need to be able to make to call a bird in? I would say if you can only learn one sound, just your typical 7 to 9 note yelp is going to be, your best call that you can go out in the woods with. Now, not saying that you're limiting yourself, because being able to have the ability to cluck, purr, bubble cluck, cut, any of those sort of calls can add to the realism, especially if they're doing it out in the woods. But going out there with a minimum of the ability to yelp will be to your advantage. How do you mimic realistic turkey calls rather than what you hear everybody do? When I'm testing turkey calls, or when I'm researching vocalizations, or maybe I'm recording audio, a lot of times I just go to real turkey sounds. I go out to video clips of real turkey sounds. I don't try to sound like another caller. I go to try to sound like realistic turkeys, real turkeys. YouTube is a great spot to go listen to real turkeys do their thing and call. We always try to put their calling into a perfect little cookie cutter box. A 7 to 9 note yelp. Well, guess what? You can go on YouTube and listen to a turkey rattle off 50 or 60 yelps in a row. You can also hear turkeys very subtly, yep, 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 yep. They'll do like 4 yelps. You just need to go and decide for yourself what's realistic turkey calls and what you need to do to mimic those. Now, with that said, one of the main questions I get manufacturing turkey calls is, which ones do I need, or which ones should I get? I always recommend mouth diaphragms for people that are learning or experienced. The best thing about mouth diaphragms is the movement is minimal, and it allows you to have access to your weapon. Any other call that I know of aside from a mouth diaphragm will require you to use your hands in some form or fashion. Number one, making more movement. Number two, not allowing you to have access to your weapon at the same time. So mouth calls are always number one, but the level of difficulty in learning those is typically higher than the other calls. So, but I always recommend you at least get one and practice and give it a shot. From there, I would say box calls and pot calls are sometimes equally as easy to learn. I would say box is maybe easier. You got a box call typically made out of a wood base with a wood paddle. And by running those over and creating the friction from the base to the paddle, you get, a turkey yelp or a turkey sound. You can cluck on a box call, you can purr, you can yelp, you can do a lot of things, and very easy to use just by swiping the paddle. Pot calls are made out of a multitude of materials. I would say the most common would be a wood pot or a plastic pot with slate, glass, aluminum, copper, a slate tech type material, a material that's kind of an engineered material. And typically you will use a peg with that. So you'll use a striker on top of the conditioned surface. So by making small semicircles or oblong circles, small J's, by dragging your striker down, you can get your purrs, sharp pushes down the board. You can get your clucks or cuts, depending on how loud you want those. And those are typically going to be also a lot easier to run, a little less movement than box calls, but maybe a little more difficulty in learning to run those. Those are kind of the three calls. Now there's a lot of other specialty calls. We've got tube cutting calls. We've got spring box calls where there's a spring and you can push or pull pin calls. But I would say the majority of your turkey calls are going to be mouth diaphragms, box calls, or pot calls. Now that you're out there, can you recommend calling sequences for different phases of the hunt? How does varying your cadence affect responsiveness? All of this stuff. So it's very tough on a hunt to go out there and tell you exactly how you should call. Now, I'm going to leave you with a few things. Is when you're out in the woods, what are the other turkeys doing? Are those hens being very, very boisterous? Are they being to the point of overcalling? Are they being aggressive? So you're kind of reading the room. How are the other turkeys responding? How talkative are they? But then the other thing you're going to do is, how is that tom that you really want to come into your location, how is he responding to your calling? Is he fired up when you cluck? Is he fired up when you yelp? Is he is he fired up on this or that? Last year in Washington, I was there with my good buddy John and Simone in Eastern Washington, and we don't typically pull. We've always got a box call with us. We've always got wood, all of our calls with us, but there's just some that we use more than the other. On this particular hunt, we kept coming back to my box call, which is the Meat Eater X Phelps box call. There was something about it, whether it was the time of the year, whether it was quietness, whether it was elevation, whatever it may be, we could get turkeys to respond to that box call better than we could our mouth diaphragms or our pot calls. So it was one of those things where just because what those turkeys in the field wanted to hear, what they responded to, we picked up on that and we used that box call more so than not. Now it did add some difficulty, like I said before, as we're trying to call those birds into our location with a box call, it's sometimes very, very tricky. For me, my right arm's got to move, to the extent of, 5 or 6 inches on the end of the paddle. So a lot of times when we were setting up, if I wasn't the shooter, I would set up, maybe more so out of the visible, area of that turkey. I would kind of go hide myself, which wouldn't be ideal if I was calling for myself, but calling for my buddies, I was able to make work. One time I was the caller and the shooter. We were being very strategic on listening where the bird's gobble was, how close we thought they were. Can we hear them spitting and drumming? And then at some point I was going to have to put the box call down and just hold on to my gun and hope that that was enough to finish them. So using kind of all of those cues throughout a hunt to decide whether or not, you need to keep using that call, or you may run into a turkey that doesn't care if you're yelping on the mouth diaphragm, a pot call, or a box call, or any combination thereof. So you're really One, like I said, I don't think you can go wrong if you listen to all the other turkeys in the area. How loud are they being? You know, if you've got boss hens that are just real squawky, you may need to get squawky because you're trying to call him away from her. Or number two, if that bird just soaking up everything you throw at it, continue to go down that path, during your call-ins. Different terrains is one of the other things is how do you, you know, is there a difference when you're hunting them in the mountains of Washington versus the open fields or the open meadow, country of Kansas? And I would say yes, but it's more so on the subspecies. I would say it was a question about terrain, but the stubborn Easterns of the Midwest are a completely different animal than our Merriams out in the West. You know, you got big thunderous gobbles or a bigger bird, but an Eastern is very, very stubborn and sometimes very, very hard to get them to give up your location. It's when they do give up their location, they sometimes seem to care a little bit less about your calls. And I know this all depends on the time of the year. But Easterns are more difficult. You go out west and we're hunting our Rios and our Merriams, a lot more talkative, a lot easier to get to say something early in the morning or middle of the day. When I'm hunting Merriams or Rios, I feel like I've got a good chance all day long. Where when I'm hunting Easterns in Kansas or wherever it may be, I feel like at times I just need to set up on a travel corridor, maybe do some, a little real subtle calling every hour or so and just hope that they want to walk by me. So that's one of the big differences. Now, terrain, I've always felt turkeys would rather come uphill to a call because if they run into danger, they can pitch away from the danger. So that's one thing I always try to keep in mind, either on contour or calling them uphill. Imagine if you're trying to call a bird downhill and they run into danger, they can still just run up the hill, but it puts them at a disadvantage versus just being able to pitch off the hill. They don't want to pitch out and over the danger of what may be there. So that's really when it comes to terrains, kind of what I'm thinking of as I go into that, setup. Can that turkey get away from danger? Are they going to be comfortable? And, look at it from that standpoint. Aside from that, that's kind of my advice for a turkey hunter. A lot of people think you need to have all the specialty gear. I would say a weapon, some understanding of being able to make some turkey calls. And then it's really just spending time out in the woods and understanding the birds. As I've said before, I've got lots of podcasts that goes very, very deep with Dr. Chamberlain and some of these research biologists that talk about, we get into, nesting cycles and why, turkey hunting may be better later in the season than early. We talk about hunting pressure. We talk about all those things, but it's very basic, the foundation of turkey hunting. I wanted to do this podcast to really just kind of say what you need, what you don't need necessarily, but what are kind of some of these luxuries. And turkey hunting is just a blast. Some people out west love to hate on turkey hunting. You should be spring bear hunting or doing something, man. I absolutely love it when I can get an animal to interact with me. Regardless of what they say, it's very, very similar to elk hunting. I get something to respond with a locator call, something I didn't talk about, but you can use all of these locator calls. You locate them. You take a guess at where you think they are. You move in as close as you can without busting them, and you sit down and try to call them in. Very, very similar to elk hunting. Yeah, I'm calling in a 20-pound turkey instead of a 800-pound screaming elk, but the game itself is similar, and I love everything about it. And if you have any other questions for me or my guests on the upcoming turkey episodes that we're just starting to get into, please email them to us at ctd@phelpsgamecalls.com, or you can send us a message on any of our social media platforms and we'll do our best to get them plugged in here. But with that said, turkey hunting isn't some big, giant, complicated thing where you need all this fancy gear. Weapon, tag, do a little bit of scouting, learn how to call, and go hunt and have a blast this spring. Thank you, everybody. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.